brought to you by Penguin.
Atonement by Ian McEwan. Read by Harriet Walter.
Dear Miss Morland, consider the dreadful nature of the suspicions you have entertained. What have you been judging from? Remember the country and the age in which we live. Remember that we are English, that we are Christians. Consult your own understanding, your own sense of the probable, your own observation of what is passing around you. Does our education prepare us for such atrocities? Do our laws connive at them? Could they be perpetrated without being known in a country like this, where social and literary intercourse is on such a footing, where every man is surrounded by a neighbourhood of voluntary spies, and where roads and newspapers lay everything open? Dearest Miss Morland, what ideas have you been admitting? They had reached the end of the gallery, and with tears of shame she ran off to her own room. Jane Austen, Northanger Abbey. Part 1. 1. The play, for which Bryony had designed the posters, programmes and tickets, constructed the sales booth out of a folding screen tipped on its side and lined the collection box in red crepe paper, was written by her in a 2-day tempest of composition, causing her to miss a breakfast and a lunch. When the preparations were complete, she had nothing to do but contemplate her finished draft and wait for the appearance of her cousins from the distant north. There would be time for only one day of rehearsal before her brother arrived. At some moments chilling, at others desperately sad, the play told a tale of the heart, whose message, conveyed in a rhyming prologue, was that love, which did not build a foundation on good sense, was doomed. The reckless passion of the heroine, Arabella, for a wicked foreign count, is punished by ill fortune when she contracts cholera during an impetuous dash towards a seaside town with her intended. Deserted by him and nearly everybody else, bed-bound in a garret, she discovers in herself a sense of humour. Fortune presents her a second chance in the form of an impoverished doctor, in fact a prince in disguise who has elected to work among the needy. Healed by him, Arabella chooses judiciously this time and is rewarded by reconciliation with her family and a wedding with the medical prince on a windy, sunlit day in spring. Mrs. Tallis read the 7 pages of The Trials of Arabella in her bedroom at her dressing table, with the author's arm around her shoulder the whole while. Bryony studied her mother's face for every trace of shifting emotion, and Emily Tallis obliged with looks of alarm, snickers of glee, and at the end, grateful smiles and wise affirming nods. She took her daughter in her arms, onto her lap. Ah, that hot, smooth little body she remembered from its infancy. And still not gone from her, not quite yet. And said that the play was stupendous. And agreed instantly, murmuring into the tight hall of the girl's ear, that this word could be quoted on the poster, which was to be on an easel in the entrance hall by the ticket booth. Bryony was hardly to know it then, but this was the project's highest point of fulfilment. Nothing came near it for satisfaction. All else was dreams and frustration. There were moments in the summer dusk, after her light was out, burrowing in the delicious gloom of her canopy bed, when she made her heart thud with luminous, yearning fantasies. Little playlets in themselves, every one of which featured Leon. In one, his big, good-natured face buckled in grief as Arabella sank in loneliness and despair. In another, there he was, cocktail in hand, at some fashionable city watering-hole, overheard boasting to a group of friends, "Yes, my younger sister, Bryony Tallis, the writer. You must surely have heard of her." In a third,
"Sample complete. Ready to continue?"